to say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum wine, yeah. You're asking the questions that nobody could. Like where the bone thugs in, are they in harmony? Do, help a snowman.
All right, everybody, welcome to another show. I'm Pete. This is the show. And here we go. Today we have a thing that we've done before called Pete, Mayor of America, or just Mayor of America or something. The name's not that important. Yes, I'm aware there's no such thing as the Mayor of America. Mayor of America is a position that I invented for myself, because that's my understanding of how government, but also many workplaces, function. You just kind of create a job that you're like, you know, this is what I would be good at. What if what I was good at became a job and then made this much money to do what I'm already doing and good at? So I have decided to give myself the job of Mayor of America. And what Mayor of America is I make rules and laws and things, but not really related to, like, you know, fiscal policy or like health insurance. More stupid things. You know, things like making it illegal to own a stereo if you live in an apartment. My God, we have a fucking new neighbor who just loves playing the music. And I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why? You don't own headphones? You don't own headphones. Like, why wouldn't you own headphones? Why? What is wrong with people? So things like that. So I have two new Mayor of America rules that I've come up with that I hope you'll enjoy. And they're both sort of story in real life based. So we'll go into the story and then get to the rule one at a time. So here's the first one. I have recently become a married man through the process known as marriage. And part of this marriage was we had a wedding reception. So what we did is we had a wedding, just the two of us and our parents. And then we had a wedding reception completely separately, which I was glad we did, because I didn't see Poon Master Flex at the reception at all. We spent no time together. And I was like, this is what people are talking about at a wedding. They don't spend any time together and they barely saw anyone. And also I was like, the chaos of planning a reception, which ours was not super chaotic, but still had some elements, was far higher than the wedding, right? And there's a lot more going on. And here's the thing. When you throw a wedding reception, you're throwing a party for other people, because the majority of the people at the wedding reception are not you. And so, you know, you have to do a lot of things for a lot of other people. It's not like throwing my own birthday party where I'm like, well, I'm going to just put together things that I want to do and then tell other people they're welcome to join me in doing those things. And if they don't want to, then don't come. It's like the part that I wanted to do was the getting married. And then I guess I'm having a party because why not? So we have this party. And, you know, I'm not saying it was a horrible time or anything like that. And I'm not saying anyone who came was horrible or whatever, because those things would not be true. But here's the thing. I found an interesting way to interpret this party as two bad things about myself, you know, which is a pretty good ratio for me. Oftentimes, if I have a new experience, like having a wedding reception, I will be like, I've found a new thing that I don't like about myself. But it's pretty unusual for me to find two solid things that I don't like about myself. So here's the first thing. We didn't have like a huge wedding reception. I think there was probably about 50 people. And, you know, they kind of just milled in and out and whatever. I feel like I talked to like three people. You know what I mean? We got home and I was going through the list of people and being like, I didn't talk to this person like at all. And I was like, I barely said hello to this person. You know, I don't even remember this person. There was someone who was invited, who Poonmaster Flex is more friendly with, but, you know, I'm aware of. And I was like, I didn't even know she was there. I was like, I didn't even see her. Wasn't aware that she came. And, you know, there were varying people who came who I was like, oh, really? I was happy everyone came and, like, happy to see everyone. And, you know, it's an awkward mix because you're like, I had family who came in from out of town. And you're like, well, I want to definitely give them the time of day. And then there's also people who didn't come as far, but you're like, I haven't seen this person. There were people there I have not spoken to in like 2 years. You know what I mean? Or like people who I would consider my friends who I maybe see once a year. And so you're like, well, I want to, I don't know. How do you mix that up? You're like, well, do I prioritize like family who came because they came farther? Or do I prioritize this person who I just don't see very much, which I could correct, I guess, but I'm apparently not going to because I haven't, you know, and like my family, I'll probably have ample opportunities to talk to in the future. But on the other hand, like, the same could be said of these friends. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you work that out? So it was weird. And I just ended up feeling like, how the hell did I spend the time? How did I only talk to like two people? You know what I mean? So number one way that I learned to feel bad about myself in a new way was just not talking to everybody. I've never been in a situation where I had a party and a bunch of people came and then I felt bad because I didn't talk to everybody. You know what I mean? I'd be like, well, I mean, they were there with their family and whatever. They had a good time and, you know, not everybody's going to get one-on-one time with everybody and it's fine. But at a wedding reception, it's like, you know, I feel like everyone who's here is here for us, right? Not the other party guests. And I didn't talk to anybody. It sucks. So, you know, that was the first way I managed to feel shitty about myself. Because I was like, these people made this effort to come and you didn't even talk to them. Way to go, idiot. But then tied into that is the second thing, which is like, then after I had spent some time feeling bad about that, I was able to switch gears and say, you know, I also feel bad about, because I'm like, why do you think you're so fucking awesome that everyone needs to talk to you? Oh, Mr. Big Nuts over here. Everybody wants to gather around and hear you wax on about whatever. You know what I mean? And I was like, why do you think you're so great? So I was able to simultaneously, I mean, this is a product of a very diseased, but, you know, powerful mind. You know, they're like, what's that saying of like able to hold two contradictory thoughts at the same time? I was able to feel bad about not talking to everybody and then also able to berate myself for feeling bad for not talking to everybody, not because not talking to everybody is fine and, you know, I'm sure people are fine, but because it was a way of being like not humble. I was like, God, you're sick. What a sick bastard. But this brings me to the first Mayor of America rule I wanted to talk about today. And this is actually not really related to my wedding reception, but more related to weddings I've attended. And it is as thus. That sounded very official in my head. And then I said it and I was like, that sounds like an idiot trying to sound official. It is as thus. It is as this. Plus one should no longer be the norm for a wedding invitation, even for married couples. Now, I'm sure most people first hearing that are like, what the fuck? But hear me out. I've been to a few weddings that, you know, Poonmaster Flex, for example, knew the people getting married. And I didn't know them at all. I didn't know the bride. I didn't know the groom. Here's a sign that maybe you're at a wedding you shouldn't be at. When you don't know the bride or the groom, you know, directly, like you don't know either of those two people, maybe you shouldn't be there. Just saying. You know what I mean? So I've been to a few weddings where that's the case. I didn't know the bride, I didn't know the groom, and I didn't know anybody except for Poon Master Flex. One of these I went to, and I didn't know anybody, and she was in the wedding. So this made it such that I was kind of just hanging around with a bunch of people I didn't know. And, you know, basically what ended up happening is I had to make a friend for the day so that, you know, I could get through the wedding and have somebody to hang out with, I guess. But, you know, it was like a friend I made for that day. I've never spoken to him or heard from him again. I don't know if he's alive. If his obituary was in the newspaper, I might recognize him by name slash face and then have to show Poon Master Flex and be like, is this that guy? I think this is that guy, isn't it? But I wouldn't be totally sure. So, you know, I've been in some of these weddings with varying levels of knowing people, but at least a couple I've been to, I didn't know anybody besides Poon Master Flex, like not one person. It was very far outside my social circle. And so from the angle as someone who's done that, I can say I didn't particularly want to be there. I wanted to be there in as much as it's like, well, if Poon Master Flex wants me to go, I'll go. And I'm not going to be like, whiner about it. But it's not like how I would spend my time given the choice. You know what I mean? I know some people are probably like, I don't know, it's fun. It's like free food, dancing, usually free booze or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'd rather buy some beers and buy a pizza and hang out at home. You know what I mean? Then the freeness of the things is not quite enough of a incentive for me. The freeness of things that are really not that expensive. And, you know, when you say it's free, I'm like, yeah, but you like drove to a place and you dressed up and you're spending your time. Like, what's your time worth? You know, it's nice when you're in a position where you get a little older and you can do that math. Because like when you're younger and you barely make any fucking money, you're just like, my time is worth nothing. So that math doesn't really help me out. But when you're a little older, you're like, you know, I could just spend the money and save X amount of time. And that's good. So anyway, from that side of things, I'm not really interested in coming. So when you give a plus one and, you know, I come with Poon Master Flex or whatever, it's like, well, it's not bad. I'm not like miserable, but I don't need to be there, right? From the flip side, from the, you know, throwing the party side, it's like, hey, look, weddings are expensive, right? And it's like, let's say, I don't know. I mean, what I hear is like an average-ish wedding is $20,000, and that's on the low end. That's a lot of money. And, you know, if we're talking about like people my age, you know, trying to own a house, people who are my age and who are me trying to own a house, and I'm like, it is hard to put the money together to own a house. And I'm like, I don't understand how people have $20,000 for a wedding. I don't understand it. But in the interest of that and like student loan debt, you know, stuff like that, I'm like, you know, we could reduce the guest list to most weddings by almost half. You know, realistically, probably by a third. But hey, that's about $7,000. That's not a small amount of money. You know what I mean? We could make one sort of little cultural norm change and save the average person $7,000 on their wedding. That's not insignificant. You know what I mean? You're well on your way to a few years old Toyota Corolla there. So that's part of it too, is from the, you know, bridegroom side. And there's so many people, like there are 50 people at my reception, all of whom I had at least met before. I don't think there was anyone there that I was completely unaware of. And so, like, even from that perspective, you know, it's like, you don't need more people there. It's not like, well, we got to fill the room. What's the press going to say if this wedding's not totally full? My God, the tabloids will be all abuzz with no one came to this wedding. You know what I mean? Okay, here's the other thing. The third angle. Like, let's say you're Poon Master Flex. Congratulations on picking a very mature nickname for yourself. And you're going to a wedding, and it's like, the core reason, right, that we do plus one is because Poon Master Flex, let's say she's going to a wedding. You know, it's an hour away or something. Not like crazy, no like destination wedding stuff. But it's like, you know, I mean, it'd be nice for her to be able to come with her partner, and that's someone she knows, and like, I don't know, they can hang out together and whatever. And so there's that little element of like, well, they can hang out together, at least she'll have somebody there, et cetera, et cetera. And I get that. But I'm going to pose an alternative. And let's do this with an analogy. When Poon Master Flex goes to a conference, a professional conference, you know, her work pays for her to go to Chicago and fly out there, stay in a hotel, pays for her conference entry and so on. Her work would not pay for me to go to a conference because she's going. You know what I mean? That's a longer event. That's a multi-day event. You know, same amount of travel as a destination wedding. Same amount of hassle. You know what I mean? All those things are pretty similar, except her work wouldn't pay for me to go. Why? Because I don't get anything out of it. There's nothing for me to be gained by going to a professional conference for a profession that I don't have. That Poon Master Flex has. Now, I can go with her. And if I did go, what I would do is fly with her, stay in the hotel with her, and then probably do something else during the day. Do my own thing. Or, you know, even work from the hotel room, I guess. But I don't necessarily need to go to the conference with her in order to travel with her or, you know, spend some time together. So it's not like if you have a wedding, even a destination wedding, you're pulling us apart. You're tearing us apart, Lisa. It's not like that. We'll still have the ability to spend time together outside the wedding, but also we could still travel together. We could still have a little vacation together. We could do a weekend getaway together. Doesn't mean we both have to go to the wedding. Okay? So here's my proposal. For my new bill or whatever it is that it becomes no longer mandatory nor expected that anyone invited to a wedding will be given a plus one. The only instance in which, and really I'm saying there is no such thing as a plus one anymore, because the only people invited to the wedding will be people that the bride and or groom want to invite to the wedding. So if I know you and I don't know your husband, I will just invite you. And that's fine. That's not a slight against your husband. That doesn't mean I don't like your husband. It just means I don't know him. So like, it doesn't really mean anything to me that he comes to my wedding. And it probably doesn't mean anything to him to see me get married if he's completely unaware of me. You know what I mean? Or has maybe heard passing comments you make about me from work, probably negative. It doesn't do anything for either of us. So why should that be the norm? You know what I mean? I think the other, and you know, think about it like this. Think about it this way. I have a party, you know, and I invite you and your husband. Now in a normal party, why is a plus one like a normal thing, right? Well, because if I'm just having people over to like drink some drinks and eat some food or play a game or something, it's really not a big deal if the numbers vary a little bit, right? It doesn't really affect. It's not like if one person is bringing one other person, I'm like, fuck, I need to spend another $125. You know, at a wedding, that's kind of the reality. And so it's almost like as if, you know, if I came to your house for your husband's birthday, I've never met your husband, I don't know him, but I'm coming to your house for his birthday party because you invited me, because we're friends, and I gave him $125. That would be weird, right? That seems like a weird interaction to have with someone the first time you meet them and like as a very first thing. And that's kind of what it feels like to me to go to a wedding where you don't know anybody. somebody's just about to spend like $125 on you and they don't even know who you are. I just think this is better for everyone. Now, I'm not saying that plus ones are forbidden, okay? For example, let's say you had some kind of like mobility issue and so like your spouse helps you out or something. Fine. Yeah, both of you can come. But like, if it's just about like, I would prefer my spouse is there, I don't know. Do something by yourself for a while. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's like maybe people feel like, well, it's like a love event. So I want, you know, love or it's like, well, there's going to be dancing and I don't want to dance with someone who's not my husband or something. And I'm like, well, yeah, but I mean the kind of dancing that's at a wedding, it's not like a high school prom. You know what I mean? There's like a couple slow songs or something and you just don't do those. That's fine. So that's my first proposal. My first proposed new Mayor of America rule. Plus ones are no longer the norm at weddings or any costly party, basically, where it's like more expensive to invite two people than one in a significant way. Okay. Rule number two. What was that about? Oh, okay. Rule number two is a kind of a Halloween preview. So I watched the movie Spirit Halloween, the movie. I watched the movie Spirit Halloween, the movie, which is, I think, what it's called. Yes, this is a movie that was produced, manufactured, somehow involved with the store Spirit Halloween, which, you know, for taking over stores that, you know, are dead. And, you know, they rise from the grave, but changed in a dark way, and they become Spirit Halloween. Spirit Halloween is something as a store that I have mixed feelings about. I think at first I hated it because it was like just felt very generic. You know what I mean? And it's the king of you would go and there's like a costume that's clearly Scorpion from Mortal Kombat. And it's like Yellow Ninja Man or Super Mario. And it's like Super Plumber Brother, you know what I mean? Something like that. But, you know, it does offer some entertainment. They also often had very tasteless, you know, sexually based costumes. But I never had a problem with that because I'm like, I don't know, if you're buying it and you're wearing it, like, whatever, that's your problem. And like, if your friends aren't like, dude, that's not cool or whatever. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's not like people didn't have access to those costumes before. And Spirit was like making it possible. It wasn't like Halloween was this, you know, holiday of peace and light where no one got upset about someone else's costume until Spirit came along and perverted the whole thing. I feel like it's sort of sad because I feel like the days where you could run in a medium-sized city, even like a Halloween store that's just open year round or whatever. And that's like the Halloween store, the mom and pop Halloween store that cannot exist anywhere anymore. I can't possibly imagine that existing anywhere. And was probably a fantasy anyway, for the most part. Right. So it's like, well, we've come to a strange era in retail where, for example, you know, we have loving memories of like Borders Bookstore. And it's like, I mean, it was a chain. It was not like a indie bookstore. You know what I mean? It wasn't a mom and pop bookstore. It wasn't a used bookstore with some cantankerous old man shit piled all over the floors, the kind of bookstore I love. It was a definite chain bookstore, really no different from your Barnes & Noble. But now that we've gotten into an era where basically anything that's not Walmart or Amazon is kind of like a force for good. It's as close to a force for good as we're going to get retail wise. Because we're in that era, it's like, well, Spirit Halloween is not the perfect retail situation or like ideal morally, economically, whatever. But it is better than the alternative. So we have Spirit Halloween in the movie. Okay, the movie opens and Christopher Lloyd is in this movie. He probably has like 10 lines total, and almost all of them were probably just recorded in a booth. I think he probably spent one day on set and not a full day. It opens with this dumb sequence where it's like Christopher Lloyd is going to buy this land that an orphanage is on or something. And the orphanage is run by like a witch. She like causes him to die, and then his spirit haunts that area, where eventually they build a Toys R Us, which eventually closes and becomes Spirit Halloween in our movie. None of this is really explained. We see this and then it's like, you know, 100 years later and these kids go to Spirit Halloween. And then I guess we sort of find out later, like, oh, this must have been where he dropped dead. And I guess no one moved his corpse or something. Okay, this is the Spirit Halloween, the movie's first fuck up. This was your opportunity, because I thought what was going to happen is like Spirit Halloween, this very sort of generic Halloween store, was going to create a lore for itself. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, it was a curio shop in, you know, rural Ohio or something that had all these cursed objects and whatever. And it was run by a guy named Jonas Spirit or something. And, you know, over time has developed into this friendlier thing. But, you know, it holds a deep secret or something like that. Now, I'm guessing they didn't actually want to do that because they didn't, you know, they don't want to make their lore such that they're like evil or something. And I think that's a mistake, because I think the fun is in them being an evil, you know, actual spiritual spooky thing, as opposed to the fun being in them having stuff, I guess. I don't know. Having a ghost story that's completely unrelated to Spirit Halloween. It just happens to be happening in a location that became a Spirit Halloween store. The area is haunted, but even the store itself is not really haunted, because the Spirit Halloween store is not like permanently affixed there. You know what I'm saying? So that's the first fuck up in this movie. The next fuck up is that we have sort of two stories that I think dovetail and do kind of send the same message, but one of them I think works and the other does not. One of the stories, you have these three boys and their friends, and they're kind of deciding what to do for Halloween. And one is like, we should go trick or treating. And the other one is like, that's for babies. We should go to a party. And the third one, I don't know what he wants to do. Doesn't seem to really care. Now, that's a good story, right? That's a good story. And what it ends up doing is prompting them to move the plot forward, because the compromise they reach is they're not going to go trick or treating, but they're not going to go to a party. They're going to do something else instead. And what the kid comes up with is, let's sneak into the Halloween store before it closes, hide, and then after it closes, we'll screw around in the Halloween store and spend the whole night there. And I'm like, all right, this is a solid idea, because every kid will experience the year when they stop trick-or-treating. You know what I mean? It's like, you know that thing they say about like one day your dad picks you up and then sets you back down, and it's the last time he'll ever pick you up and set you down again. And he sets you down that time and never picks you up again. And you don't know it at the time, right? Trick-or-treating on Halloween is the same tragedy. One night, one Halloween night, you ring a doorbell, somebody puts a Snickers in your pillowcase, and that's the last house you will ever trick-or-treat at. I have no idea which house is the last house where I ever trick-or-treated. And, you know, that's sad. It's very sad to think that way. Adults can also kind of get in on this theme, because they're like, ugh, it's sad because when you're like 12, you think you're all grown up and stuff, but you're not. Like, you could definitely trick or treat when you're 12 and get away with it, provided you're wearing a costume. I actually don't mind people trick or treating much, much later. I would say up till like age 17. But as long as they're wearing a costume, as long as they've made some effort that's reasonably okay, I'm down with it. This will get into my new mayor of America proposal. So let's table this for a moment. This storyline is basically in the movie about the kid giving, you know, has to let go of the past. And it's like, embrace the now. And, you know, things change and that's okay. And I'm like, yeah, okay. It's a good storyline. I'm like, it's like a Disney Channel movie storyline. Hey, we can't trick or treat forever. There's also a parallel storyline because the main kid's dad died. And, you know, he's had some trouble letting go of it. And they had some Halloween traditions. And mom is remarried. Mom, played by Rachel Lee Cook, who does nothing except for be in the movie and just kind of stand around sometimes. And I was like, is this like, is she in here? Because then you could have like some names that people recognized. Because she's just there to like call their phones and stuff. And I'm like, hey, she's all that. Even looking like a mom, I'm not fooled into thinking she's all that any more than I was with glasses and overalls. So dad's dead, mom's remarried. And you know, mom's husband has a daughter who's young and is like, Halloween is fun. I'm going to be a cute princess. And the boy is like, Halloween is not about princesses and fairies and unicorns. It's about spooky shit. You know, and they're decorating the house with like fairies and pink stuff and whatever. And he hates it. And I don't know. I have no feelings about that. What I don't like is the movie's kind of message here is like, again, letting go of the past and embracing the present. But I'm like, I mean, this kid's dad is dead. And I don't think he died like 10 years ago. You know, and so there are people in the movie who are kind of like, you got to let it go, man. And it's sort of like, I don't know. I think that it's appropriate for a kid whose dad is dead to have some feelings about it for a while and to not necessarily want to just like everything that you did with your dad can go away. But the main issue I have with that storyline is I'm like, we're already getting this idea through the trick-or-treating thing, which is far more Halloween, but also far more aligned or like appropriate or whatever with the Spirit Halloween movie. I don't really need mourning a dead dad in the Spirit Halloween movie. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit like you're watching some shitty canon action movie from the 80s. That's horrible. It has no plot. It's like no one knew what they were doing. And then some lady is getting topless and you're like, oh no, not for this movie. Like if Florence Pugh wants to bear her machines in Oppenheimer, you're like, all right. Like, you know, it's a Christopher Nolan movie. I guess it's classy. And, you know, I'm like, well, you're like well lit, I guess, you know, and there's like period. There's a set that looks appropriate for the period. It doesn't look like grandma's apartment. You know what I mean? It doesn't look like, it's not obviously a hotel room with like very bare set dressing. It's like, okay, this is a real thing. That, I guess, for some reason in my mind, I'm like, all right, whatever. But then in that shitty 80s movie, even though that's really what that movie is for, it's like a boob delivery vehicle. Even though that's the fact, I'm like, oh, don't do it for this movie. And I'm like, yeah, maybe like parental death, don't do it for a Spirit of Halloween movie. You know what I mean? Don't try to take me to an emotional place in this movie. And that was like the thing about that storyline is I'm like, Spirit of Halloween, why are you trying to make me feel something like an emotion? Like, that's foolish on your part. I know what movie you are. I think Christopher Lloyd knows what kind of movie you are. But do you know what kind of movie you are? Spirit of Halloween? Spirit Halloween? There are many other fuck-ups. You know, there's a sequence towards the end that was like, this is what this movie should have been. Which is like, Christopher Lloyd is sort of possessing all the animatronics and stuff. It's unclear, like, he possesses a clown that has a chainsaw arm. It's very unclear whether that chainsaw then becomes an actual chainsaw. Because I'm like, well, he's able to walk around, which this clown was not able to do before. Or like he possesses a sort of Slender Man character and that, you know, he's able to make facial expressions. So I'm like, well, there's some kind of biomechanical process happening here based on your possession. I would argue it's more complicated to make human facial movements than it is to make a chainsaw. So I guess it's possible that a fake chainsaw could be rendered real by this possession. I don't know. I don't know how this works. Unclear. But anyway, there's a moment where multiple things are coming to life and like attacking the kids. And I was like, Spirit, this is what the movie should have been. Okay? It should have been, you know, they go in and like all of the packaging of shitty fake spider webs like fly around and burst and create a huge spider's nest. And then there's a big spider. There should have been a sequence where they're like in that shitty little cardboard haunted house, you know, with all the animatronics. And then they go in there and it becomes a giant haunted house. They should have had a part where, you know, you step on a trigger on the floor and it turns the things on. They like are trying to get across a room and it's just full of those things. And they're trying not to step on it because that'll wake up the various ghosts. You know what I mean? They should have leaned into the fact that it's like we sell cheap to moderately priced animatronics. But if there was like 50 of them, you know, it would be kind of cool. And I'm like, you have the ability to do that. You have those items. Why wouldn't you do that? That seems like the winning game here. You know what I mean? All you need is 50 extras to dress up in those big inflatable suits. And then you just show them like falling down off the wall. The package is burst open as the fans turn on and they all start inflating. And then they're all chasing the kids around. But unfortunately, they're easily shoved over or kicked out of the way because they're just big balloons. And the one kid is a kickball champion or something. That's what the movie should have been like. Should have been Spirit Halloween related mayhem. Now, a quick note on the Spirit Halloween store. There's a short, you know, it's kind of in place of the getting dressed montage in a typical movie where they're having their form of fun in the Spirit Halloween store. So they're screwing around, playing with Nerf guns and like putting on stuff and whatever. And I sort of give the movie credit and anti-credit for the same thing, which is it did look pretty much like an average Spirit Halloween store. So on the one hand, I was like, well, they're not like overselling it. They're not trying to convince me that a Spirit Halloween store is this like amazing, enormous warehouse of things. You know, it looked like about a normal Spirit size and like whatever. But on the other hand, I was like, I think this is the place to fudge a little bit. Just be like, this is the Spirit Halloween store. You know, I would be willing to accept a like three times as big and twice as good as normal Spirit Halloween store because like it's a movie. Why not? You know what I mean? We all accept that like, oh, why does every apartment on every sitcom in Manhattan, why do they have these giant apartments and yet they have like no real job? And I'm like, well, because if you're trying to film a TV show, you can't film it in like a 400 square foot studio apartment because that would be madness. Trying to film it would be insane. So it makes a lot more sense to have a fake apartment that's a little bit bigger because that accommodates more stuff. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I can forget it. It doesn't matter. You know? And I'm like, do the same thing. There's an element of Spirit Halloween that I hesitate to talk about. So I'll try and just bring it up as tastefully as I can. There's a girl in the movie who plays girl, and she's supposed to be like older and in high school. And I felt that there were many shots of her in very tight pants and framed in ways that I was like, felt very questionable to me. And I was just sort of like, guys, if you're going to do this, why not just make her 20? You know what I mean? Why not make her clearly of age? The actress is of age, I believe. And it put me in the awkward situation of, like, I Googled this actress's age because I was like, oh my God, what's happening in this movie? And could they do this with an underage actress? Like, would this even be allowed? But anyway, important distinction here. If one is an underage girl and is, because I'm like, who is listening to this? What 12-year-old girl is listening to this? What kind of monster situation are you in? I'm picturing you in some kind of chamber locked in a basement, and it's just like you're forced to listen to this. That would be kind of amazing if that happened, because then this podcast would become very famous for being like the worst podcast. It's not going to get famous for being the best podcast. That ship has long sailed and is not possible. But theoretically, becoming the worst podcast for that specific reason, that seems like my clearest path to fame right now and fortune. So I didn't love it. Okay, so in real life, if someone chooses to dress that way and whatever, that's fine. Okay, because here's the thing, you choosing to dress that way in real life doesn't mean people will or should be or are justified like leering at you or something. But when you're in a movie, you're not making your own choice of how to be dressed. And then you're not making a choice. I, as the viewer, don't get to choose what I'm looking at. The way, whatever's in the screen, in the shot, is what I'm looking at. And I just felt there were some shots that I found questionable. Like, if this was a Disney Channel movie, I think Disney Channel would be like, no, we're not doing that. So, I don't know. It made me feel very weird, and I didn't even know if I wanted to say anything about it, but I just did. Okay, here's the new rule based on this. It has nothing to do with tight pants. The new rule based on watching this movie that I've come up with is that kids are required to trick-or-treat as soon as they're able, and the last year they trick-or-treat is the year they are 13. So if you are 12 or 13 on Halloween, you're trick-or-treating. If you're 14 on or before Halloween, you don't trick-or-treat. Here's why. First, I picked 13 because, you know, it's like unlucky number 13 and all that. So that works great. But also because I feel like 12 to 13 is kind of the transition time. Now, I think most kids probably stop trick-or-treating around or before then, and that's fine. But I think it's sort of sad because I think most kids could go to 13 and be just fine, and like no one giving out candy is going to say anything about a 13-year-old trick-or-treating. It's like when you're 13, you think you're too old for it, but you're not. But so you think you're too old for it, and you don't want to do it because it's for babies. But then what you don't realize is you stop trick-or-treating and you can never go back. Don't look back. You can never look back. I saw a orange pumpkin sticker on a Cadillac. So I think what we should do to solve this problem is obligate kids to trick-or-treat until they're 13. There are other advantages to this. One advantage is we don't really want 12 and 13-year-olds going to a Halloween party versus trick-or-treating. I mean, when you're 13, like going to a high school party is not great. Like as a parent... if it was like, we're going to go out trick-or-treating versus we're going to a high school party, I'd be like, I would prefer the trick-or-treating, I think. The other thing is, I feel like, as evidenced by this movie, a 12 to 13-year-old who doesn't go trick-or-treating is more likely to do something else they shouldn't. In other words, like sneak into a retail store and stay overnight. Which, you know, I don't want happening as an adult, because if I'm working in that store and I'm like, God damn it, You know what I mean? You guys made my job harder for me. My boss is riding my ass because I'm like, I was supposed to close the store and like do a good job last night. And my boss is not very receptive to my complaints that I'm like, look, if someone's actively hiding from me, I'm not going to find them. I always used to talk about this at my old job because I had to close the library. And sometimes when I worked at a different branch, they were a little bit more like they would check under the tables and do some other stuff, depending on who you worked with. And I was always kind of like, I think my job here is to like inform people the library's closing and kind of hustle them along so that they get out in a timely fashion. I don't really think it's my job to prevent someone who is knowingly breaking the rules and trying to stay after hours. I don't think really my job is to prevent that from happening. You know what I mean? I'm like, I think I'm here to do, to make it easy for people trying to do the right thing to do the right thing. But if someone is dead set on hiding in the library and staying here overnight, they probably will succeed. Like, I'll just say that right now. If they have even sort of a vague sense that they're trying to do that, I think they're going to succeed. Because I'm not really looking, I'm not treating this as a hostile environment where somebody is trying to do that, I guess. Anyway, I feel like trick-or-treating is a good outlet for them. The other thing is, like, I think it's kind of fun because kids of the similar age and their friends and stuff will all go trick-or-treating together. And they'll know it's the last time. And, you know, if they're forced to do it, it can be a little bit like they can pretend like, oh, it's so lame or whatever, but we have to do it. And then they'll have fun. And that's a big thing to me in my mind of kids of that age is like they don't want to do things that seem childish and lame. But if they're forced to do it, they'll probably have a good time. You know what I mean? So I think they'd have a better time. I think that it would be a more fun environment culturally. And I think it would also, I feel like trick-or-treating has kind of reduced over the years, and it would be nice to see it bounce back a little bit, I think. So there you go. Those are my two new rules. No plus ones at weddings, and kids are mandatory trick-or-treating until 13. And there you go. There you have it. Isn't that a better world? Aren't I describing a much better, more fun world? This is why you should give me your vote as mayor of America. All right, everybody. That's all we've got for this time, and we'll see you next time. Talk about two times.